This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
It was supposed to be just another challenge for my video channel. The idea was simple. Stay 24 hours in an abandoned house on the edge of town, record the experience, and see if I could handle the creepy vibes. My viewers loved these kind of stunts, and I'd done them before without much trouble, but this time, something was different. The house was old, boarded up in places, but still standing firm.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Inside, the air was stale and the faint scent of decay lingered. I'd set up my camera on a tripod in the living room and started narrating my impressions of the place. The floors creaked under every step, and the wind outside made faint whistling sounds through the broken windows. Everything was fine until I heard the first explosion. At first, I thought it was a car backfiring or maybe a distant thunderclap. But then it happened again, louder this time, closer. Fireworks? Out here? The house was isolated with no neighbors for miles. Confused, I peeked out of a window but saw nothing unusual. That's when the second blast, this time accompanied by a bright flash of light outside. My chest tightened as the memories of my childhood flooded back. It wasn't the sound itself, but what it triggered in me. I froze, staring out into the darkness, my mind spinning. I thought I saw movement near the tree line, but it was too quick to be sure. Shaking off the unease, I told myself it was nothing. Maybe some kids were messing around. I went back to the couch, determined to push through. The next sound wasn't an explosion, but a scraping noise coming from the kitchen. My pulse quickened. Grabbing my flashlight, I moved cautiously toward the noise. The kitchen was empty, but the back door was slightly ajar. I hadn't noticed that earlier. I shut it, locked it, and took a deep breath. Maybe the wind had pushed it open, or maybe not. I returned to the living room and sat down, only to feel a cold rush of air behind me. Turning quickly, I saw that the back door was open again. This time, I knew I'd locked it. I felt a lump in my throat as the scraping sound returned, this time closer. Before I could react, a small object rolled into the room and landed near my feet. It was a lit firecracker. The explosion knocked me backward, the sound deafening in the confined space. My ears rang as I scrambled to my feet, coughing from the smoke. I barely had time to collect myself before I saw a figure standing in the doorway. His face was gaunt, disfigured with patches of smooth, scarred skin where facial features should have been. His eyes gleamed with an unsettling excitement. He held a handful of firecrackers and tossed another one into the room. This time, I ducked behind the couch as it went off, the blast echoing through the house. My camera fell from the tripod, clattering to the floor. The man laughed, a rasping sound that sent chills down my spine. I bolted for the stairs, my mind racing. Upstairs seemed like the only option, even though I knew it was a dead end. I could hear his footsteps behind me, slow and deliberate. I reached the top and darted into a bedroom, slamming the door shut and locking it. My heart was pounding as I pressed my ear against the door, listening. The footsteps stopped outside the room. For a moment, there was silence. Then, the handle rattled, followed by a low chuckle. He wasn't in a hurry. I backed away, looking for anything to defend myself. The room was nearly empty, except for an old wardrobe and a cracked mirror on the wall. Then I heard a hiss. My stomach dropped. Smoke began to seep under the door. He'd lit something outside, something bigger. Flames licked the edges of the door as the heat intensified. I knew I couldn't stay there. I opened the window and looked down. The fall was steep, but there was a patch of overgrown grass below. It was my only chance. I climbed onto the windowsill, the heat from the fire at my back. As I prepared to jump, a firecracker flew through the open window, landing next to me. Panicking, I pushed off the ledge, plummeting to the ground. The impact knocked the wind out of me, but I was alive. I staggered to my feet, my ankle throbbing. Looking up, I saw him in the window staring down at me. His face was illuminated by the flames consuming the house. He smiled, holding a lit flare in one hand. For a moment, I thought he would jump after me, but he just stood there, basking in the chaos. I limped toward the tree line, desperate to put distance between us. Behind me, the house crackled and roared as the fire spread. I didn't stop until I was deep into the woods, where the sound of the flames was just a faint hum. Collapsing against a tree, I tried to catch my breath. My mind raced, trying to process what had just happened. The police arrived hours later, alerted by the fire. They found the house reduced to ash, but no sign of the man. I told them everything, but they seemed skeptical. The old house had been abandoned for years, and there were no reports of anyone else in the area. They chalked it up to squatters or vandals, but I knew better. That night changed everything. I stopped doing challenges for my channel, unable to shake the memory of his scarred face and the sound of his laughter. Every time I hear fireworks now, I'm reminded of the terror I felt in that house. I still wonder who he was and why he targeted me. Maybe I'll never know. But one thing is certain, I'll never go near an abandoned house again. Hey guys, we noticed that only a small portion of you are subscribed to the channel. If you really enjoy our stories, please follow us and like the video. It's free and it really helps us a lot to keep growing. We upload videos daily and interact a lot with our community, as we upload stories that you recommend us, and once a month, we upload your own stories. And to those of you who are already subscribed, we appreciate all your likes, comments, and your constant support. You are as much a part of SSG Animations as we are. And now, back to the video.
I don't know why we thought it was a good idea. It started with Caleb's obsession with urban legends. He'd spent weeks talking about the Claudia Miyongos case, the woman who killed her three children, claiming she was possessed. He said he'd found her abandoned house. That's where the idea came from. Spend 24 hours there and try to summon them. There were five of us: Caleb, Nora, Jason, Angie, and myself. None of us believed in ghosts, but we thought it'd be fun, a way to break up the monotony of our lives. We packed some snacks, cameras, and a flashlight. Caleb brought a notebook with instructions for a ritual he'd found online. The house was what you'd expect. cracked windows, graffiti-covered walls, and an overpowering smell of mold. It looked ready to collapse. We set up camp in what used to be the living room. Caleb insisted we start the ritual at midnight. Until then, we passed the time sharing stories and laughing. It felt like a stupid sleepover. None of us knew what was coming. At midnight, Caleb lit the candles. He read aloud from his notebook while we formed a circle holding hands. I'll admit I was uneasy, but I chalked it up to nerves. Caleb finished the chant, and we waited. At first, nothing happened. Angie cracked a joke, and we all laughed, but it was forced. Then a sound came from upstairs, a creak like someone shifting their weight on an old floorboard. We froze. Caleb grinned, but it didn't reach his eyes. The first few minutes after the ritual were quiet. Too quiet. Jason suggested we look upstairs, but Nora refused. She said we should stay together. Caleb, of course, insisted we split up.
Come on! We'll cover more ground. It's not like anything's actually here.
Against my better judgment, I agreed. Caleb and Angie went upstairs. Jason took the basement, and Nora and I stayed in the living room. That's when the noises started. It wasn't just footsteps, it was whispering. Soft, indistinct, and coming from everywhere all at once. Nora grabbed my arm. Her face was pale.
This isn't funny.
I wanted to tell her it was all in her head, but the truth was, I heard it too. A loud bang came from the basement. Nora and I jumped to our feet. Jason screamed, a short, sharp sound that cut off too quickly. I ran to the basement door, but when I opened it, all I saw was darkness.
Jason?
No answer. The air coming from below was icy, and the whispers were louder now. Then we heard footsteps on the stairs. Slow, deliberate. Nora grabbed my arm again, her nails digging into my skin. I shined my flashlight down the stairwell. Something was moving. But it wasn't Jason. It was small, too small to be any of us, and its movements were jerky, unnatural. I slammed the door shut and shoved the chair under the handle. Nora was panicking, pacing back and forth, muttering about calling the police. My phone had no signal, and neither did hers. Caleb and Angie were still upstairs. I told Nora to stay put while I went to find them. She refused, so we went together. The stairs creaked under our weight as we climbed. The air smelled worse up here, like something rotting. I whispered Caleb's name, but the house swallowed my voice. We checked the first room. Empty. The second room had old furniture covered in dusty sheets, but no sign of Caleb or Angie. That's when we heard Angie scream. It came from the last room at the end of the hall. We ran. The door was half open, swinging slightly like someone had just gone through it. Inside, the room was dark except for that faint glow of a candle on the floor. Angie was sitting in the corner, rocking back and forth, her hands covering her face. Caleb was nowhere to be seen.
Angie, what happened?
She didn't answer. Nora tried to pull her hands away from her face, but Angie started screaming again. It wasn't a normal scream. It was high-pitched, guttural, like an animal in pain. Then she stopped. She just stopped mid-scream and went completely still. Her hands fell away from her face, and I saw why she'd been covering it. Her eyes were gone, just empty sockets, oozing something dark and thick. Nora started crying, and I felt like I was going to throw up. Then Angie started laughing. It was quiet at first, but it got louder, echoing off the walls. I grabbed Nora and ran. We didn't look back. We ran downstairs, but the living room was different. The furniture was gone. The walls were bare. The circle of candles we'd lit earlier was still there, but now the wax was melted into strange, intricate patterns. I called for Jason, but the house swallowed the sound.
We have to leave.
I agreed, but when we tried the front door, it wouldn't budge. The windows were the same. It was like the house had sealed itself shut. The whispers were back. I could almost make out words. Almost.
Do you hear that?
I nodded. The voices were saying our names. Over and over. Whispering them like a chant. And they started screaming. High-pitched, ear-piercing screams that made me clap my hands over my ears. Nora did the same, but it didn't help. The sound was inside my head. When it finally stopped, Nora was gone. I called her name, but there was no answer. I was alone. Completely alone. Or so I thought. Then I heard it. Soft, deliberate footsteps coming from the stairs. I turned, flashlight shaking in my hand. A child was standing there. His neck was bent at an impossible angle and his head lolled to one side. He took a step toward me, dragging one leg behind him. I ran. I barricaded myself in a bedroom upstairs. My heart was racing and my hands were shaking so badly that I could barely hold the flashlight. The door rattled, but it held. I pressed my ear against it, listening. The whispers were back, louder now, and they sounded like my friends, Caleb, Nora, Jason, and even Angie. They were calling my name, telling me to open the door. It's not them. It's not them. But the voices sounded so real. I almost believed them. Almost. Then something slammed against the door, hard. The wood splintered and I backed away, holding the flashlight like a weapon. The door burst open and the child stepped inside. His eyes were black, empty pits, and his mouth was stretched into a grotesque grin. He moved toward me, dragging his twisted leg behind him. I threw the flashlight at him and I ran. I made it to the stairs, but something grabbed me from behind and shoved me. I fell, tumbling down the steps. Pain exploded in my leg as I hit the bottom. I tried to stand, but I couldn't. My ankle was broken. I looked up and the child was at the top of the stairs, looking down at me. He started coming down, one step at a time, his neck twisting with each step. I dragged myself toward the front door, each movement sending pain shooting up my leg. The child was getting closer, his twisted leg scraping against the stairs. I reached the door and pounded on it, screaming for help, but it didn't budge. The child reached the bottom of the stairs and started crawling toward me. His movements were fast, erratic, like a spider. I screamed, grabbed a piece of wood from the floor. Then he lunged at me. I swung, hitting him in the head. He fell back, but only for a moment. Then he started laughing. The same high-pitched laugh Angie had made upstairs. I crawled toward the kitchen, desperate for something, anything, to defend myself. I found a knife on the counter and turned just as the child lunged at me. I stabbed him in the chest, but it didn't stop him. He grabbed my wrist, his grip ice cold. I felt his nails dig into my skin. I twisted the knife, and he let go, falling to the floor. I didn't wait to see if he'd get back up. I crawled back to the door and threw myself outside. I made it to the road, dragging my broken ankle behind me. A passing car stopped, and the driver called an ambulance. They took me to the hospital where I tried to explain what had happened. But no one believed me. They said my friends must have left before the house collapsed. That's what they claimed. The house had collapsed, and I was lucky to be alive. When I got home, I checked my camera. I remembered filming everything, but the memory card was empty. Not a single second of footage. But I know what I saw. I know what happened. And I know I'll never set foot in a haunted place again. This story is based on the events surrounding Claudia Miangos, known as the Hyena of Queretaro. In 1989, Claudia, a woman who had seemingly lived a normal life as a mother of three, became the subject of one of Mexico's most chilling crimes. One night in an apparent state of altered consciousness, she committed the horrifying act of taking the lives of her three children inside their home, claiming she had been guided by voices and visions that compelled her to do so. Since then, the house where the tragedy occurred had become a focal point for numerous accounts of paranormal activity. Neighbors and visitors claimed to hear sounds of children crying, footsteps echoing through the halls, and anguished screams, even when the house is unoccupied.
It started as a challenge. I was just a kid trying to impress my friends by spending 24 hours in the abandoned house at the end of our street, peeling paint, broken windows, and enough rumors to keep people away. The story was always the same. A family used to live there, then one day, they vanished. Some people said it was haunted, others claimed it was a crime scene. I didn't care about the stories, I just wanted to prove I wasn't afraid. I didn't tell my dad, he'd never let me do it. He ran the ice cream shop in town, worked late hours, and thought challenges like this were pointless. But my friends were watching. They dared me to do it. So, with a flashlight and my phone, I climbed through the broken window and into the house. The first thing I noticed was the smell. It was damp, like wet wood and mildew. Dust covered every surface, and cobwebs hung from the ceiling. The air felt heavy, like the house itself was watching me. I told myself it was just my imagination. I started exploring, documenting everything on my phone to prove I was really there. The living room had old furniture covered in sheets. The kitchen was empty except for a few broken dishes. It was creepy, sure, but nothing out of the ordinary for an abandoned house. But then, I heard it. The scratching. It was faint at first, like nails on wood. I froze, holding my breath to listen. The sound was coming from below me, from the basement. I tried to convince myself it was just an animal, a raccoon maybe, but my curiosity got the better of me. I found the door to the basement. It was locked, but the lock was old and rusty. I broke it easily with a hammer I found in the kitchen. As the door creaked open, the scratching stopped. The basement was pitch black. My flashlight barely cut through the darkness. The stairs were steep and creaky, and I had to hold onto the railing to keep my balance. The smell was worse down there. It was a mix of dampness and something metallic. I almost turned back, but then I heard it again. The scratching. Louder this time. I reached the bottom of the stairs and found a light switch. The bulb flickered on, casting a dim yellow glow over the room. It was filled with junk. Old furniture, boxes, tools. And in the corner, chained to the wall, was a man. At first, I didn't understand what I was seeing. He was on all fours, wearing tattered clothes that barely covered him. His hair was long and matted, his skin pale and bruised. He looked up at me, and for a moment, we just stared at each other. Then, he growled. Not like a person. It was like an animal. I stepped back, my heart racing. The man lunged, his chains rattling as he tried to reach me. His teeth snapped inches from my face and I stumbled back, tripping over a box. He barked like a dog, his eyes wild with anger and fear. Before I could move, I heard footsteps upstairs. Heavy, deliberate. Someone was home, panic set in. I scrambled to my feet, but it was too late. A man appeared at the top of the stairs, silhouetted against the dim light. He was older, maybe in his 60s, holding a length of chain in one hand and a crowbar in the other.
"What are you doing in my house?"
His voice was cold, menacing. Before I could answer, he saw the chained man and his expression darkened.
"You let him out, didn't you?"
I didn't know. The old man started down the stairs, raising the crowbar. I was trapped, nowhere to run. The chained man growled again, pulling against his restraints. The old man turned to him, furious.
"Quiet!"
The chained man yelped, retreating as far as the chains would let him. The old man raised the crowbar again, but this time, the chain snapped. The sound was deafening. The old man barely had time to react before the chained man was on him, tackling him to the ground. They struggled, the old man swinging the crowbar wildly. I took my chance and bolted up the stairs, my legs shaking as I ran. Behind me, I could hear the sounds of their fight. Growls, screams, the sickening thud of metal against flesh. I didn't stop running until I was out of the house and halfway down the street. My friends were waiting for me, laughing and joking, but their smiles faded when they saw my face. I told them everything, showed them the video on my phone. They didn't believe me at first, but then we heard the sirens. The police found the old man unconscious in the basement, his leg broken and his face bloodied. The chained man was gone. They searched the house and found evidence of other victims. Photos, belongings, even bones. The old man and his wife had been kidnapping people for years, keeping them as prisoners in their basement. The man I saw was one of their victims, someone they'd kept for so long he barely remembered how to be human. The news spread quickly. Everyone in town was horrified. The old man was arrested, but his wife was never found. They said she must have fled when she realized the police were coming. As for the chained man, no one knows what happened to him. Some people say he's still out there, hiding in the woods, too afraid to face the world. Others think he's looking for revenge. I still think about that night sometimes, about how close I came to becoming another victim, about the man in the basement and the life he must have lived. I'll never forget the look in his eyes, a mix of fear, rage, and something else, something that still haunts me. So, if you ever think about breaking into an old, creepy house for a challenge, don't.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to take care of yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps. Ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
Some doors are better left closed.